Trigger warning.
This episode has mentions of sexual assault and rape, which some listeners may find disturbing.
Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everyone. I am Rick Sanchez.
Not fair. I'm such a big fan of that show. Not fair.
June 20th, ma'am.
I can't wait. Hi, I'm Maddie Matheson. And you're watching Just a Dash.
AKA the Bicons Podcast. I was like, who's Maddie Matheson? And then I like immediately remembered.
I love Maddie Matheson.
You may have noticed, if you follow us on Instagram, that we are talking about the ultra snubbed I May Destroy You, starring Michaela Cole, who you may also know from Black Earth Rising and Chewing Gum. Just the most exquisite person to ever walk the face of the earth.
Literally, she looks like she was sculpted out of marble.
Truly.
The cheekbones.
The skin. She has like the most perfect skin.
We're just like fawning. How could you not? Her. She looks like a marble sculpture.
And then she's just like real. So intelligent, and like her writing is so complex. Anyway, Delbar is going to give us a synopsis for I May Destroy You.
I May Destroy You is fucking crazy. That's not part of the synopsis anyway.
So good.
As described on Wikipedia, let's go ahead and give you the rundown. As described on Wikipedia, it's very thorough, very lovely. I think I should read it to you. Anyways. Arabella, played by Michaela Cole, is a young Twitter star turned novelist who found fame with her debut book, Chronicles of a Fed Up Millennial. Love that. And is publicly celebrated as a millennial icon. While struggling to meet a deadline for her second book, she takes a break from work to meet up with friends on a night out in London. The following morning, she struggles to remember what happened to her, but recalls the events of the night with the help of her friends Terry, played by Warucha Opia, I hope I said that right, and Kwame Papa Isedu.
Which is also, I noticed, is...
My apologies if I didn't.
The actor's last name is Arabella's last name in the show. I thought that was really cool. Yeah.
Arabella Isedu. Yeah, basically she was SA'd that night. She went out with friends, and like some rando named Simon that was like partially her friend like left her there when she was drunk.
And they like made acquaintance with these two other randos that were at the bar. And as the series goes on, we end up finding out that one of these strangers spiked her drink at the bar, which resulted in the stranger essaying.
Yeah, it was really... I like that they didn't show that scene.
Yes.
Like, but instead showed it in tiny, tiny, like, a few seconds, a second, like, flashback here and there.
That's what I've been saying, like, all this time about, like, people putting unnecessary...
R-word
scenes in television and film. Because you can imply it and it have the same impact without putting an audience, like, through the trauma of seeing it happen to someone.
It's so distasteful. No actual reason for there to be an R-word scene in media, period. Yeah. There was in Perfect Blue. It was disgusting.
Yeah, that was a lot.
It was drawn out, and it sucks because I liked the rest of that movie so much.
Yeah.
But you put in the most for what?
Yeah.
Plus, it's animated, so it's like you wanted to draw that and voice that. Like, you're disgusting for that.
It's so male gazy, and not to it's bring like that it's like the movie. Darkest side of the male gaze is like an R-word scene.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I remember like one time I was way too young to be watching a movie with my parents, and there was an R-word scene in it, and the girl was like very young, like especially young, and it was very drawn out, and I remember to this day, like it was traumatic.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I had like a similar experience with the movie Straw Dogs. I saw it when I was like a teenager probably, and there's a good chunk of the movie, probably 20 minutes long. That's just a really drawn out like essay.
Huh?
And it was so unnecessary and like disgusting, and it's just stuck in my mind forever, I guess. And like, why put an actor or actress like through that? Also,
no.
Hate it.
Who is that for? Like, I'm just asking, like, why? For what? For what?
Well, luckily, I May Destroy You didn't do that at all.
Hopefully that's the thing of the fucking past, because truly. I feel like our generation understands like how gross that is and like how unnecessary it is. Hopefully. Yeah.
I will say that, like, I think the more women that are behind the camera, the less, I think that's part of the reason that it's happening less, and that, like, more nuanced and, like, authentic stories about, like, essays in the aftermath, they're happening because there's more women behind the camera. Because most of the time, when the men are behind the camera and they're making these scenes, it's just a fantasy for them. Because it is all men. It is all men.
Yes, indeed. Did y'all hear that? Did y'all hear that? Because it's all men.
It is all men.
It's all of them.
Yes. As this show, like, clearly proves, because not only Arabella is not the only person in the show that is essayed. That's the thing I love so much about it, is, like, they don't follow, like, the standard formula of what an R-word is and, like, what is, like, the legal jargon for it, or, like, how it's seen in the legal system, or how people normally would, like, describe it. There's, like, stealthing and attempted and coercion and, like, stuff like that, just not, like, a flat out, you know, date R word like Arabella went through. And I really, like, appreciated that. It was so, the whole show was just so, like, nuanced in a way that, like, we haven't seen.
Yeah. When she called out Zane there, at the podium, that was delectable. I love that.
Yeah, that needed to be done.
No, I don't know. It's not a show just about essay, like some people say, like some articles say. It's about, like, everything.
Yeah.
We talk about, like, in the story, both Arabella and her close friend Kwame were both assaulted. And they both report their crimes. And there's, like, a major difference between the people Arabella's talking to. She talks to women, two women, and she does have her friends beside her. That makes a big difference.
Yeah.
It's a difference. They talk about, like, what it's like to actually report. Go and report a crime, right, like this. So when Arabella goes, you guys have probably already seen this, but she has her two best friends next to her. She's talking to two women, one of whom are Black, and she values that a lot, so I'm sure that made her feel a lot more comfortable. And she was, like, talking. They were going back and forth. They were so compassionate with her. But when Kwame went in, first of all, he was too ashamed to even tell his friends right away to have them go with him. He preferred to go alone.
He also had to look up if what happened to him was counted as an essay, which, like,
that's how you know, like, men are kind of left out of this world, this conversation, this seat at the table, like, too much. Too much to the point where he's literally, Googling it. It's so sad. Yeah.
Especially because the offense was committed by another man. And his queerness gets brought into it because Kwame is a gay man. And when he goes to report his crime, he is met with a male officer. And you could tell that the cop was, like, 1,000% uncomfortable. Which, first of all, don't be a cop if you're not comfortable with somebody coming to you to report any kind of crime. I mean, like, don't be a cop, period. But if you're going to be, like, you need to be okay with these kinds of conversations. He was clearly uncomfortable. And then when it came, and then when he found out that it was a gay situation, he was like, oh, I have to go talk to the special unit. I have to go get somebody else. And then he came back. He was so unhelpful. He was like, oh, you know, there's a kiosk for this kind of thing. You could have just reported it. And it's like, he wanted to be, like, heard. That's all he wanted, was to be heard by somebody and to try to get, like, his perpetrator to face consequences. And
you're supposed to be on his side, for fuck's sake. And you try and redirect him to a kiosk.
Right.
What, because you're personally uncomfortable that it's a gay sex crime?
And, like, then, like,
fuck you.
And you were hounding him about the name of the guy, and he kept trying to say that I don't know his name. We were using Grindr, which is a gay dating app. Like, we were being discreet. I don't know his name.
That's so common.
And then you were hounding him about the name. So he gave you the name and you got uncomfortable.
Give him the address. He had the address.
Right. Why? Like, it's...
That's what I'm talking about. When somebody burglarizes a home, you don't know the burglar's name.
Right.
You don't know the burglar's name. Sometimes you just know the address.
Gather the evidence. That's your whole fucking job.
That's your job, sweetheart.
Like, do what are you talking about? It just really highlighted how, like, traumatizing the whole reporting experience can be, and, like, why a lot of people don't do it.
It's definitely worse for men. I mean, I don't know if I can say that, but
yeah,
it sounds like it is. I don't know.
Yeah,
because really... like, it's gendered, right? Like,
yeah,
it is a sex crime that's mostly done by men, whether it is to women or men. It's mostly committed by men, and there are I mean, nothing happens in a vacuum. Like, you can't ignore that there are these male-on-male, like, norms.
And it probably happens, like, so much more often, because a whole, like, consequence of toxic masculinity is that it's demeaning to be, like, a victim of a sex crime. Not that it's, like, any less demeaning to be a victim if you're a woman, but, like, when you're a man and, like, your whole, like, place in society is tied to you being a man, and then you're a Black gay man, so, like, you're already facing all of these intersections, and it's, like, I understand why it was so hard for him to, like, even tell his friends at first.
Yeah. It reminds me of McKay from Euphoria.
Like, see, that was
so hard for him to even tell the girl he liked.
Like, that was, like, one of the scenes, like, when I first watched Euphoria. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Euphoria now. Like, I really do love Euphoria. But the first time around when I watched it, that, like, really turned me off.
Definitely.
And that's the difference between, like, scenes like that and how I May Destroy You handled it.
Yeah, no. I feel like it's definitely harder for men to report.
Yeah.
I feel like so many essay cases revolving, like, men on men, like, are probably unreported.
We're, like, in such a space where not only is it, like, hard for people to tell if they have been a victim, but the men don't even know that they're perpetrators, that they're predators. Like, the definition of...
Are you saying Zane didn't know he was a perpetrator?
No. I'm saying he wouldn't have considered himself a rapist, because
saying he didn't know.
I'm saying he knew what he was doing was wrong, but he wouldn't consider himself a rapist. The definition of the R word is so strict, and it's written by men. And, like, so men that are actual predators get away with so much and, like, do stuff that's so skeezy, and they don't even realize that they're rapists and that they're, like, predators. And it's so disgusting, because that just feeds into the cycle of people not knowing if they're victims or not. That leads to Kwame having to look up, was I assaulted?
I disagree with you, kind of. I feel like people like Zane know that what they're doing is rape, but I don't think that, oh, maybe this is what you're saying, they don't ascribe the word rape to it.
Yeah, that's because, exactly what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
They know it's skeezy. Saying. They know it's, like, bad.
No, it's, but... like, they know it's worse than that, though. They know it's... They know it's rape. They know it equates rape.
I don't think they do. I don't think men know that half the shit they do is bad. I think they think it's fine.
What?
Yeah.
No. No. I wholeheartedly believe that, like, men know that what they're doing is wrong when they do something wrong. And the full extent.
I do. I'm not trying to remove responsibility from them. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying, oh, they just didn't know that it wasn't rape.
I'm saying they're not idiots.
There's no consequences. Nobody talks about coercion. Nobody talks about stealthing. Mm-hmm. So when they get called rapists, they're like, what are you talking about? Like, I didn't force you. I thought we were having consensual sex. All I did was take off the condom because it was uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I get it.
They try to, I'm not alleviating any responsibility from them. No, I'm saying that the R word is so, like, the definition is so, like, constrained right now that, like...
But if you do something that is the exact definition, you still did it. Like, you don't...
But stealthing...
You just don't know the word.
Stealthing isn't even considered rape in some places.
Stealthing... Oh, okay. Lately, like, legally?
Yeah, but...
It's considering the world is the way it is, so...
Why do you think Kwame, like, decided to... As someone that, like, identifies as a gay man, why do you think he decided to... have sex with a woman?
That's, like, debated a lot online, but I feel like... Oh, it's debated a lot online if, like, he was right to do that or wrong to do that or whatever. Personally, I think he did it because he felt so hurt by, like, doing what he normally found attractive or what he does find attractive, that he thought that this would, like, give him some sort of revelation on, like, oh no, this feels better. I don't feel violated this way. This feels right. Mm-hmm. Maybe all of a sudden it's going to feel right.
Yeah. Like, oh, let me try this again. Because, I mean, he did call it, like, an experiment.
Which is, I think, not all the way fair to, like, that girl and everything.
No.
To treat her as an experiment. But,
I
get why he did it, you know? Because he was just feeling so much hurt. It was a gendered crime.
Yeah.
that he, like, thought that, like, maybe if I change up that variable, the gender variable, maybe I'll reach some sort of epiphany, like, maybe something. You know, he was kind of, like, desperate for something different.
I guess I was, like, kind of confused about, like, how to feel about it, because, like, on the one hand, the, like, the way they were talking about it after he did it was, like, it sounded really similar to, like, how people talk about, like, if trans people have to, like, disclose that they're trans before they have sex with somebody, you know? Oh,
like, people saying, like, you...
It's deceptive. I don't think he had to... That's what I'm saying. See, like, did he... Like, I don't know... I guess what I'm saying is I don't know either way. Like, I literally don't know.
No, I don't think trans people should have to... Say.
No, I mean for Kwame. I don't know if he was obligated to tell her.
It's about, like, your intention. No, you probably... If you're gay and, like, you genuinely want to, like, hook up with a girl out of, like, attraction, like, because you're really feeling it, you're really feeling her, I don't think you... I think that's just, like, a you thing. That's just a personal thing. But if you saw her as an experiment to test your gayness, I don't know.
Yeah. It was definitely, like...
What are you, troubleshooting your gay? You know what I mean? I know, like, something really, really awful happened to him and everything. But I don't know. I don't think it was all the way fair to the girl. But at the same time, I don't know.
She was also... different. She was also, like, blatantly racist and homophobic.
Oh, yeah, she was a piece of shit. Thank
she came much. Up with her own word for the N-word and just said the F-word, just, like, throwing it around as, like, a straight white woman. And then, like...
Fuck her. She wasn't white.
Yeah. Huh?
She wasn't white.
She wasn't white?
No, I think she was actually Persian.
Oh, was she?
But either way, she's non-black. So, like, fuck you don't get to say any of that.
Yeah.
Plus, you're making us Persians look bad. Like, go fuck yourself. I can't even speak. Go fuck yourself, madam. What was her name? Nina?
Before, like,
did you think Kwame should have disclosed anything?
I feel like sexuality is fluid, and I don't, like...
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe I don't think you should have to go into every sexual encounter and be like, hey, I'm also, like, into men. And, like, I'm not saying he's, like, bisexual because he identifies as a gay man, but, like...
She just got really nasty. I thought it was kind of unnecessary to get that nasty.
She was acting like it was... Because my first thought was, oh, she's disgusted that she had sex with a gay man. Because there's a lot of straight women that will not have sex with bisexual men because they've had sex with men. And they think it's gross. Yeah. So that was the first thing. I thought that's what she was upset about. So I think, like, that was
that sounds right.
That was my takeaway from the situation. Mm-hmm. I think they were both wrong.
Yeah, I don't think he should have just, like, ran to a woman immediately after, like, that sort of trauma. It's, like, really bad. Like, you need to take a step back from, like, all that shit altogether and, like, really talk to somebody, not just, like, fuck someone and hope it, like, makes you feel better. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. And then, like, even by the end of the series, like, we find out, like... That, like, Terry was even, like, coerced into a sexual situation. Now she feels, like, icky and she wants to go to that support group. And it's, like, it just kind of, like, goes back to, like, how everyone you know, for the most part, has probably been essayed in some way, shape, or form. Everyone you know.
It just makes the whole show so realistic because it's a show about the blurred lines. You know what I'm saying?
The impact of, like,
education. Yeah. Like, when she listened to that podcast before that podcast, she didn't even know that Zane, like, essayed her.
Yeah. It's also, like, about just the aftermath. Like, I feel like there's a lot in, like, a lot of media, we get, like, just the present feeling of, like, being essayed and, like, the immediate time after that. There's not a lot of, like, representation of the aftermath. I mean, the whole season took place over, like, the span of a year, and, like, a lot of shit can happen in a year, and, like, that shit doesn't just go away.
No, yeah,
like, that deeply affected her for a long time, and it's going to for the rest of her life, to the point where she wrote an entire book about it.
A lot of people don't like watching stuff surrounding that on television.
Yeah, I mean, that's the right, I can understand that, but,
you know,
for me, it was
because if you look at Euphoria, Hunter Schaefer yeah. is basically also like this character.
Very much.
She's also going, like, she's also learning how to, like, unpack that trauma, that exact trauma
yeah.
through a therapist, but, like, you and know, also some people like, are just more averse to it because she's yeah. trans or, like, whatever reason, or because she's a child or, like, whatever reason.
You and, know? Like, acting out and stuff like that and
yeah.
being kind of hot and cold. I, like, definitely related to Arabella a lot. Not necessarily, like, in her personality, but, like, in the way she responded to what happened to her and, like, how she handled it, like, emotionally and sort of, like, the internal consequences that she, like, had and, like, dealt with. Like, that was really nice to, like, for me personally to see. Like, I can understand why a lot of people, because it's, like, heavy and it was very triggering, but not, like, in a, not, like, in a, like, intense
not like in a I can't watch this right, type of way.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like her daily life was mixed throughout.
Yeah.
Like literally the morning after she listened to that podcast in Zane's apartment, she was just wearing a shirt because they hooked up the night before. She left without any word walked to the nearest clothing store, bought an outfit. She looked fly as hell, by the way, somehow, some way. And then went to the clinic to report the crime. And then immediately went to work.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Got her hair shaved. Then immediately went to work. Like, it was just...
Just went about her day, literally.
Because that's what people do.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's like, what else are you supposed to do?
You go about your day and then your boss calls and you're like, yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Like, what are you gonna say? You know what yeah. I'm saying? That's how it actually is.
Yeah. I really liked how, like, the show tackled, like, all of the intersections that, like, she was facing. Like, there was the piece that she was reading to like her editors, I think like in episode 7, where she was saying I was too busy being black and poor, I never really like identified with the woman part of my life, and like now this happened to me and I have to deal with being a woman now, and like is it too late to like stand up for women and like call myself a part of this group, and like I don't know, I really
is it like time to serve a new tribe, she yeah. said.
That was really intense.
She's such a brilliant writer.
Ugh.
Fuck.
Yeah.
So then in your opinion, did you think the ending was good? Did you think the ending was something that is like, I guess victims might see as like an achievable or like a goal?
I thought it was the most like poetic episode, obviously, because it... So I think it was...
From my perspective, I think it was, like, a nice achievement.
Yeah. It was... It rounded, like, out everything really well. It was Arabella, like, going through all of these scenarios in her head of, like, what would happen if she saw her... If she saw her, like, assailant again. Mm-hmm. And I really thought she killed that man, first of all. I was like, oh, that's where this is... Because you told me she was... You were like, oh, the ending's weird, so be prepared. And I'm like, oh, they're going to have to hide a body. Like, I thought that was going to be the whole episode. And then, like, I got it. Like, it moved on to the next thing. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. So she's going through, like, all these scenarios of what could possibly happen. And in the end, she was like, none of that works for me, so I'm going to move on. And she, and it called back to the whole conversation she had with her therapist about keeping all of the stuff that reminds her of it, like, under her bed, and, like, how she needs to...
Literal dead body.
Yeah, and how she needs to, like, come together with that stuff, and, like, how she can't keep separating it from herself. But then she puts the dead body, like, under the bed, and in the end, like, the one version of the guy walks away with the dead guy under the bed. And, like, it was just really, like, beautiful to me. I think it did the show justice, for sure.
I guess, like you were saying, it was, like, three fictional fantasies and then a coda, which is, like, when she chose to stay home and not go to the bar. And when you think about it, like, you know how the last episode is called Ego Death?
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, an ego death, right? She's letting go of that subjectivity of her trauma. And, like, doing exactly, like, letting go of her ego. Because in a textbook sense, the ego mediates between the conscious and subconscious, right? And, like, it is your self-image, your self-esteem, et cetera, et cetera. And it basically helps us understand what reality is to us.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to run through those three insane scenarios one of which where she tried to, like, essay him back. All to... Which was very icky, very gross. But she understood that. She understood that it was icky and gross. She's like, I can't become the person that I hate. You know, like, I can't become that.
Yeah.
So she went through all of these just to overcome that sort of, I guess this sounds stupid, but, like, ego problem that she had. She was very self-centered, especially in, like, the Halloween episode.
Yeah.
She genuinely thought she was the only victim. And she wasn't being there for her friends. You know, she was, like, very, like, caught up in that Twitter fame that she was in, and she was very stuck in that circle, and it was consuming her, and, like, she made it her identity.
Yeah.
Right? And to her, that was, like, a way of coping.
Mm-hmm.
But it quickly burned her out, right?
Could For you sure. agree? Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. I thought it was cool because the last episode was, like, supposed to be confusing. It was supposed to mimic that really strange journey that some people take lifetimes trying to complete or may never complete, or some people try to complete with, like, psychedelic trips to, like, kill their demons, basically, and, like, be able to look under your bed and, like, be able to be unafraid and actually move on. It was really beautiful. And she did it in, like, a very writer's way, like, because she is a writer, like, every scenario that she went through, each of the three, it was like a sticky note that she would keep on her wall and she'd, like, remove, right? Like, they're just her thoughts.
Yeah.
And she thought, well, what if it happened this way? What if it happened this way? And what if it happened this way? And she tested each one out in her head, which is so relatable.
Yeah.
Before, I mean, except in the show, she actually got to, like, kind of live them and then live with the lessons. And then she got to keep that strength that those three lessons gave her, where she was able to, like, almost even humanize her rapist, and, like, by humanizing him, like, she was able to separate the trauma from him and from her life and from her identity, which is probably the most, that is the killing of the ego, right? It was really cool. I don't know.
It was by far, like, the most mature decision she had made. Yeah. I think, like, throughout the rest of the season, she was, like, pretty impulsive. And, like, rightfully so. Like, she had every right to, like, go down the holes that she did. I mean, like, it was a rough year.
We were watching her trying to cope. Yeah. Like, course it wasn't going to be neat.
She was literally trying to just put her life back together. And I think it was really cool that, like, she kind of had this moment where, like, instead of just acting, she sat down and she, like, thought about shit. And she was like, it kind of felt like a breath where she was like, I'm done. Like, with this, almost. And she could actually, like, sit down and write her book and, like, get it out. It kind of, for me, the whole show and then, like, the finale kind of brought it home for me is, like, the trope of, oh, like, all these false accusations, like, these kind of accusations can ruin a man's life, and, like, them never taking, like, a woman's reporting seriously because they're always worried about, like, the man's life being ruined. And, like, I thought it was cool that we saw, you know, 12 episodes of, like, how ruined this woman's life got for so long, about how her being essayed led to, like, friendship problems and career problems and addiction problems and, like, increased mental health problems, like, all kinds of shit. Like, her, we actually got to see, like, the ramifications of it and then the victim coming out on the other side. Oh my god, I can't I knew there was, like, a parallel that I wanted to draw that I couldn't think of it. And I think it's the first fantasy in the last episode where she's still, like, faking being, like, drugged or whatever, and then he, like, turns around for a split second, and when he turns back around, she's, like, fully conscious and she's like, David. And she, like, scares him, you know what I'm talking about? It's just like whatchamacallit?
Promising Young Woman.
Yes. So, like, true. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my god.
Oh, you don't want to fuck me now that you know I'm not drunk out of my mind? Bro.
It was like, the whole episode was kind of like this R-word revenge fantasy. But then, like, not going through
it. She had
with
to
it.
Live them out to know that they were, like, flawed and weren't going to give her the closure that she wanted.
But it wasn't the life that she wanted. Yeah.
Yeah. But through the, like, three, quote-unquote, like, fantasies she had, it was the ultimate way to question what it meant getting closure for something that otherwise may never have closure. I don't know.
Like getting it within yourself.
It's difficult. It's not to say that, oh, all you need to do to get over your essay is ego death. No. It's just in the case of her, like where she was like already kind of famous and everything and like kind of making it her identity both online and to like her friends and like personal circle. It was kind of the reality check she needed. But it was also the key to like coming to terms with something that ugly.
Yeah. I don't know. I like how, to go back to, like, Kwame a little bit, I like how, apart from, like, his own essay, like, we got to see, like, different ways. Like, we got to see the one guy that he was hanging out with who was, like, still questioning, and, like, Kwame helped him with that and helped him move on and, like, be in a happy like relationship with another man, which like to the detriment of Kwame because Kwame liked the guy or whatever. And then the other guy he was going to hook up with, and the guy was like, dude, I just want to like have dinner, let's go to a museum, like I actually want to like date you. And then he said that I want a hug, and the guy just like came up and hugged him, and you could tell that like where Kwame used to like do these hookups like just for fun, he was doing it to cope at this point.
Because it's like foreign territory to have someone care about him.
Yeah, because as soon as like someone like just wanted to spend time with him, it like freaked him out and he got defensive. That's, I really like that.
And
that's
so cute.
I like that we got to see it through like through a queer lens too.
That's absolutely lovely. Yeah. Kwame deserves everything.
I know. I really like him.
He deserves
like
the world and a half, actually.
He was a really good friend to Arabella when he was like going through the same shit as her, and like he didn't, I mean, yes, he, like, was going through, like, the shame and guilt and everything, but he never once, like, made it about himself. Yeah. And, like, he continued to, like, put her first. And, like, I really loved, like, the whole dynamic with the three of them, with, like, Arabella and Terry and Kwame, because, like,
your death is my death, Jeez.
Your birth is my birth.
I love them.
Because they, like, forgive each other constantly. Like, they let each other be, like, these flawed humans. And, like, hurt each other, and they forgive each other, like, every single time.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, that's what, like, love is. They know that they never mean to hurt each other, so, of course, forgiveness is, you know. Yeah.
Because we were, like, building, because of, like, Simon, we were building up to, like, oh, Arabella finding out that Terry was the one that told him to go home that night and to leave Arabella alone. And then when Arabella found out, it was, like, the quickest conversation ever. Mm-hmm. She was like, it's all right, you're amazing.
It's effective.
Yeah. It was, ugh.
It was really beautiful.
Yeah.
I love them. Yeah, I love them. I do too.
Terry's a ride or die if I've ever seen one.
Everybody needs a Terry.
Yeah.
Everybody go get you a Terry.
Terry's ready to kill that man.
As she should.
Yes.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, I love Terry. There was some shit that like Terry said that I didn't necessarily like, but I think that she ended up like learning the lessons and like learning. Like she, that one comment like during her birthday party that she made to Kwame about how black women don't get essayed for the exception of Arabella, and like that offended Kwame because, you know, she didn't know about him yet. And then it turns out like she had been essayed without her like even really knowing it, and like coming to that
and
realization.
That denial was like part of her coping.
Yes. And like
it's just about pain, bro.
Yeah.
Ego death, baby.
Give it to me. I'll pay you $100 to kill my ego.
$100?
Like one of those like magical swords where like you do it and it like sucks it out.
Oh my god.
I want that.
I know, that's the goal for me, definitely. Hopefully one day when I'm a geezer.
You need to go through the Doctor Strange treatment.
Yes, that's the answer.
Yes,
find me the Sorcerer Supreme, please.
Please.
There is, the fuck is speaking of Elizabeth Olsen, she and Aubrey Plaza have fucked.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Like, they just have. I think I just know it.
I watched Ingrid Goes West, like, a couple months ago, and I saw, like, a bunch of, like, their press. Because that's how they, like, they worked together on that movie, and that's how they did, like, all those, like, press junkets together. They fucked.
No, I know.
They fucked.
No, I know. I have those compilations saved.
Lord,
at the
mercy.
Ready. I just know. Anyways,
there's too much like tension.
Elizabeth Olsen literally grabbed her ass, bro. I can't. No,
just gal pals. There was this, I almost said Rami Malek. That's so racist. Riz Ahmed.
That is so racist.
I know.
Get out. Get out. So all brown men are the same. Oh, God, yeah.
Don't get even a, look anything out of alike. My house. There was this Riz Ahmed interview. And I think the interview had, like, brought up, like, representation. And he was kind of... He was dissecting, like, the difference between, like, visibility and representation and, like, how, like, 10 years ago we were demanding, like, visibility and now, like, we know better and we want more and we're demanding, like, representation instead. And he said...
If you haven't watched Sound of Metal, go watch it.
Oh, my God. It better win Best Picture. He said, people want to be their unapologetic full selves. I think that's exciting. If you watch work like Michaela Cole's TV show, I May Destroy You, it blew my mind, inspired me so much on so many levels. It's just unapologetically her, because she's made it so personal. It contains within it its complexity that goes far beyond representation. It's her presentation of her soul. And you've got an amazing piece of TV out of that.
You know? A lot of people I respect have been saying they love I Love I May Destroy You.
I knew I was correct to choose Dylan O'Brien as my ride or die when I was 14 years old, because that man, he said, what did he say? I love Dylan O'Brien.
He referenced this too.
He tweeted, like, at the beginning of the month, like when the Golden Globe nominations came out and everything, and everybody was like really pissed off about it.
Oh, yeah.
He said, Golden Globes are laughable. Not only is I May Destroy You absolutely fucking brilliant, it should be required viewing. Right. Apparently, you can be too far ahead of humanity. Michaela Cole, we don't deserve you.
Where was the lie?
Tell me.
Emily in Paris, what? Romanticized ignorance?
Who watches Emily in Paris?
Literally, who's seen Emily in Paris?
I haven't talked to a single person.
Literally, that is, what's Emily in Paris?
I don't even... All I know is Lily Collins is in it. That's literally the entirety of my knowledge of the show.
I mean, with Peace and Love. You know, Hunter Schafer was, like, doing a thing where she went on HBO Max. She was like, here are all my favorite TV shows and movies, and that's how I found I May Destroy You and then put you on.
Yeah.
She said I May Destroy You was, like, one of her favorite TV shows ever of all time, and that you have to watch it, and that's when I watched it. So, my fave. And then Michaela Cole said in an interview that one of her muses right now, first one that came to mind, was Rami Yusuf.
Oh, my God.
From Rami. See, it's so wonderful seeing all your favorites.
I can see it. Like, his show, like, is really, like, kind of, like, raw and honest, too.
Probably, it was a good show.
You know, to the same extent that hers is.
I understand, like, not a lot of Americans understood the nuances of it. Like, they thought maybe forgiveness was in the wrong places or whatever. And especially the whole thing with, like, liking your cousin. I couldn't get past that, but it's not something I haven't seen in brown cultures. Either way, it was beautiful. Beautiful maybe isn't the word. It was great. It was wonderful. I liked it a lot. And I like Rami Yusuf. I think he's chill.
Not to, like, normalize incest, but the entire royal family is incestuous, and you all watch that shit like it's a soap opera. So, get over it.
Yeah, no, it should have the same standard, bitch. Yeah. It's disgusting everywhere. Don't pick and choose, because he's brown. Anyways.
Even, like, Jane Fonda, who's, like, one of my faves, because she's, like, an act. She's like 85 fucking years old and she's still like an activist. She's been like an activist since she was like in her 20s. I love that bitch.
Oh my god,
bitch.
I love her.
And I love Grace and Frankie. It's like one of my favorite shows. I'm rewatching it like again and again. It's so good. And even she was like, I May Destroy You was so good.
She said that?
Yeah, she was like, I can't believe that the Golden Globes like didn't nominate her.
Khala John, come over for chai. I love her so much. You know, she was in an interview recently. I think it was like Vulture or something magazine. I don't remember. But it was one of those Google searches. And someone said, someone asked, like, how is Jane Fonda so pretty or something? Mm. And she was like, good genes and a lot of money.
What a fucking icon. There was another one. She was like, what does John Fonda eat for breakfast? And she was like, my boyfriend between two pieces of toast and butter.
Buttered on both sides. I love her.
She like calls I May Destroy You like really important. That's amazing. Like, that's coming from like a fucking Hollywood idol.
Middle-aged white woman? Okay.
Not even middle-aged. She's a full-on like Greatest Generation bitch. Like she's so old and she's 85 or like 90. She's older than a boomer.
No.
There's no way. Ma'am. She's 80 and she's 80 in
Okay, find a picture because...
Or 70, Jane Fonda. 83 years old.
Shut the fuck up.
She was born in 1937. She was a Depression-era baby. She lived through World War II.
How does she look like that?
She told you. A lot of money. I don't know. I just think it, like, goes to show, like, all of these, like, really famous people, like, even beyond the people that we've mentioned... What are y'all doing? Like, not giving her all of the awards. It was, like, an important piece of television. It was beautifully done. Like, what more do you want? And you nominate Emily in Paris for some fucking reason.
Hey, if you've been looking for ways to help out and educate yourself, please visit bicons.com/resources.
Here you'll find Black Lives Matter, First Nations support, and LGBTQI+ outreach.
Do your part.
There's always a way to help.
The 2021 Best Picture nominees are as follows. The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Nomadland, The Trial of the Chicago 7, Mank, Minari, Promising Young Woman, and Sound of Metal.
I really want Sound of Metal to win.
Great selection. I've been meaning to watch Minari, but it's hard to find.
I haven't heard of the other two, like Father and Mank. I haven't even heard of those.
Me neither.
Like Judas and the Black Messiah was good and everything, but like it rightfully amazing. Got a lot of criticism for being from the perspective of a snitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it got a lot of hate for that.
Does that diminish? Okay, why?
Because it was like a Black pain movie, and instead of it, like, and it was supposed to be empowering. But it wasn't because it was from the perspective of somebody that sold out the Black Panther Party and got Fred Hampton assassinated.
Wait, but how is it supposed to be a good story if Fred Hampton got assassinated?
Because it could have been about Fred Hampton instead of being about the snitch.
But are we idolizing the snitch?
It does kind of idolize the snitch.
No. That's not the message I got.
I don't know. I saw a lot of Black people really upset about the movie. Okay. I saw a lot of Black people really upset about the movie. But I think it's, like, really well done. Like, I like the movie and everything. But
well, I didn't know a lot of Black people were upset about the movie then.
Also, like, I think it was the Golden Globes. I thought the
snitch was, like, wrote out to be, like, a really fucking rat-ass guy.
But I mean, we saw it that way. But, like, why make him the protagonist, you know?
That's true. It's like everybody turned on him. But, yeah, that's true.
I think it was the Golden Globes, like Lakeith Stanfield and Lakeith Stanfield and Daniel Kaluuya both got nominated for Best Supporting Actor. And everybody was like, well, then who's the lead actor?
Shut the fuck up. Supporting?
Who's the lead actor then?
So who's the...
No. They're literally the main characters. Like, who is the...
Well, there we go. That's the problem. I wish you led with that. I didn't know that.
Like, are you going to make the white guy, the detective, the main character? Like, who the fuck was the lead character?
No fucking way.
How dare you?
Have you seen... You watched Nomadland with me?
Yeah.
I thought it was a little underwhelming.
I thought it was, like, boring.
It's on April 25th.
April 25th. Yeah, like, I get, like, the hype behind Nomadland, I guess, because, like, it was really pretty. And, like, the acting was the best part of the whole thing. Like, I could barely tell that half those people were actors.
It's supposed to be, like, a documentary hybrid.
Yeah, like, I think the acting was good, but I do think it was, like you said, I do think it was underwhelming. I thought it was a little boring. And then a lot of people said that, like, they think Promising Young Woman will get a lot of awards, but that it won't win Best Picture, because then that would mean that Hollywood is, like, recognizing rape culture, and they just don't think that's going to happen. Especially, like, after all of the, like, scandals over the past few years.
That sounds about right.
They just don't think that they would allow that to happen. They just put it there. I could see that. They're like, here, give them this.
Because it's worthy.
Yeah.
Of the...
I guess I just wanted to, like, end it out with, like, this one quote that Michaela Cole said about the whole thing. About, like, the ending... Or, sorry, about the scene where she, like, walks into the water in Italy. She said... I guess, as I said, with the realizing you are water and you are the thing that you are afraid of, if you go back to episode one, when she's in the taxi coming back from Italy, she has these memories, and one of them is of her being at the beach with Biagio, who is a fucking prick.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Sidebar. And the tide comes to her, and she flinches because she's scared of the water. And now she's realized her power and her danger, and she's just walked into the sea, and she emerges like a sea monster.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah, that's the other thing. Cinematically, it's everything. Yeah.
It reminds me of, like, that conversation she had with Zane, like, after she outed him and everything. And she was like, I'm a lot scarier now than the last time you saw me. It reminded me
yes,
of that.
Yes, bitch. Oh, my God. Correct. Oh, I love her so damn much.
Ego death equals making you dangerous, apparently.
I think if this were compressed into, like, a movie, if it were in a different reality, it would be nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
1,000%.
I could see that.
I mean, it's British, but you know what I mean.
I want to see Michaela Cole, like, do a really, like, big project. Not that this wasn't a big project. But, this like...
was it? I want to see more.
I want to see her, like, in, like, films more, I guess, rather than just, like, series. I want to see her in movies.
Yeah, but, like, a film that she completely wrote.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she needs to be please. In charge of it because she's the best.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
For queer representation alone, how many cocktail drinks from Ego Death, the bar in London, would you give it out of 10?
Like a 9. And really the only point that I'm taking off is because I wish there was more. But like the stuff that we did get was like impeccable. It's like a 9. Yeah.
I'll give it a 9. Yeah, a 9. 9's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
What was that like vegan place called? Happy Animals?
Yeah, the vegan delivery service.
How many happy animals out of 10 would you give the show overall as a whole?
Oh my God. 11.
Truly.
It's one of my favorites.
Knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, 11 out of 10. Thank you. Yeah. Next. How amazing.
Just, like, to touch on the happy animals thing, like, real quick before we go anywhere. They were absolutely right. And, like, I loved their, like, analysis of that, of, like, the whole, like, vegan movement and, like, how climate change has literally been gentrified. And, like, how dare you, like, ask.
It was touched on.
Yeah, it was good. I liked that little, like, thing they put in there. But then, like, I thought about climate change for 5 seconds and almost cried. So.
Ooh. Yikes. Yeah, no, I can't watch.
I can't think about it. Thank you for listening to the Vicons podcast. Music by DaVinci_Beats. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and share. It helps us a lot.
To keep up with new episodes, you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok @Vicons Podcast and Twitter @Vicons Pod. See you next time.